scores! Gilmore scores! The ball, three left!
Off the glass, to left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yale, a shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Okay, let's get it going. We are underway on this Wednesday, October 23rd, with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg. Welcome to Flames Talk on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. We got a fun, busy hour ahead of you, or ahead of us. I guess it would be ahead of you as well.
Ahead of we?
Ahead of us. Hi, Vicks.
Hey, buddy. How's it going?
Good, man. I'm curious if you're picking up on the same thing I've picked up on now through six games this season. Text line wide open for you, 960-960 this hour and all the time on Flames Talk. Flames 5-0-1 to start the season. Best start through six games in franchise history. Very cool to see. It's been a lot of fun covering this team since the beginning of the season. But have you, and I'm curious, and I honestly don't know if this is just a me thing or if other people have picked up on this. What I have noticed, and my largest observation of this season so far from the outside and kind of what I'm observing from people, other people observing this team, like, have you picked up on just how much people are digging this group and how much people are into this team? And I started to kind of take notice of it right from the beginning of training camp almost. Definitely after that first preseason game in Seattle where Braden Pahal was hitting anything that moves and they came with their work boots on in the very first preseason game and it went from there. And I just remember even then, that postgame show we did that Sunday night in Seattle, started getting texts that were saying, you know, maybe this team's going to surprise some people. Maybe this group, you know, with their attitude and their work ethic, like, could this be a team that surprises people? Then obviously they have the bonkers first game in Vancouver that set the tone for the rest of the year, and it's only continued from there. But our text line, Twitter, like, people love this team, Vicks. Even those, I'm even picking up on those who were hoping for a bad season. The group of people that were hoping for this team to be poor and this team to get the highest draft pick possible and who are hoping maybe for a couple of rough years so that the team can eventually get to where they think they need to go or how they think they need to get there. Even some of those people or a lot of those people are finding it hard not to get on board and enjoy and cheer for this team. I'm curious if you've picked up on the same thing because that is maybe my largest takeaway of the first six games is just how much people are in love with this group in the early stages of the season.
So where I've begun to notice it is on social media, first of all. But second of all is the trip to the elevator post game. We're up in the press box hanging over Scotiabank Saddle Dome. We exit to the 300 level, take the stairs down, have to navigate our way a little bit. And rightfully so, based on the early season success. I mean, they haven't lost at home yet, but it's a palpable feeling when you're exiting the press box, working our way down to the bowels of the Saddle Dome, and there's an energy, there's a chatter, there's a bit of a buzz that I don't recall necessarily feeling last year. So that's where I pick up on it the most.
It's just our text line explodes after games right now.
I bet.
We were like pushing 100 texts before we even opened the text line on Tuesday night after the latest win by the team, the comeback shootout win over Pittsburgh on Tuesday night. And people were like, people are buzzing about this team. And what I think there's a lot of different things that go into it. And I think the number one thing is just the low expectations, or I don't want to say low expectations, but I think a lot of Flames fans came into this season saying, We're really happy about the new direction that's been undertaken. We're liking the transparency that Craig Conroy and this management group has been working with. And let's see where the cards fall.
Yep.
And so I think for a lot of fans going into this season. It was like, hey, I just want to be entertained. I just want to see this team continue the direction that they're on right now. And let's see how it all shakes out. Let's see how the team plays. Let's see what the results are. And so when you come in to a season as a fan and you're saying to yourself, hey, I'll be happy with whatever happens, and I'm just really stoked about the new direction the organization's on, I think it makes it a whole lot easier to, now they're playing like this, well, you're hooked, you're in.
Oh, yeah.
And then on top of that, they have a really infectious attitude. They've got likable guys that are kind of the faces of the team, from Mackenzie Weegar to Rasmus Anderson and 3-for-3 on the death stairs, and that's turning into something, to Ryan Lomberg and Nazem Kadri and his, you know, Nazem Kadri's I say defiance in a good way, but kind of like that, hey, pump the brakes on the, do we want to be here on day one of training camp?
Oh, yeah.
That stuff resonates with fans. That stuff resonates with people who cheer for this team, I think, and have for years and years and years. And all of the Michael Backlund and so on and so forth. I just think the attitude's pretty infectious. The underdog feel is pretty easy to get behind. The whole idea of proving people wrong. Like, if you're a Flames fan and you cheer for a team that feels like outside of your fan base, the rest of the hockey world doesn't believe in you, that makes it that much easier, I think, to get on board with the group and really enjoy what they're doing. And it's been a lot of fun, you know, being in this position, getting the privilege to talk to Flames fans on a nightly basis and kind of be that conduit. You're like, geez, it's been a while since it's been positive like this. Even 2 years ago when, or 3 years ago when, I guess it was 2 years ago, when they were having that no, it was 3 years ago now. That's crazy.
Time flies, buddy.
3 years ago when they were off to that great start. Back when you were in your 30s. That was only like 20 days ago, let's be honest. Let's be honest here. But When this team was having that crazy year under Daryl Sutter and the Lindholm, Tkachuk, Johnny line, so on and so forth, even that year, it felt like there was just there was more criticism and there was more negativity mixed in with the positivity. Yeah, I mean, sometimes you don't like this player or some, you know, there was a little bit of Nazem Kadri negativity on Saturday for whatever reason after the lone miscue that he made there that, yes, ended up in a game-winning goal. But I've picked up on overwhelming positivity and very little negativity in the early stages this year.
Well, I think a lot of that factors into, and you referenced a couple of years ago, a lot of it factors in for me is the expectation of what this group was. And I think a lot of the sentiment was, just go out, give us an honest, honest effort, put on your work boots, and just try to deliver to the best of your ability through 82 games, and the chips will fall wherever they are. Now, suddenly you start 5-0-1, and that workmanlike attitude, that, I don't want to say, it's not arrogance, but that aggressiveness that was shown from day one in training camp towards the media, the general public, the national pundits, saying, we don't care what you guys think of us. We know what we are. We know what we're able to accomplish. That defiance of what they had. And I think a lot of fans embrace that. Even, as you mentioned, Team Tank might have embraced it a little bit, where you get into a situation and you're like, okay, well, these guys are pledging they want to be here. They're saying all the right things in training camp. Let's see how it unfolds in the regular season. Well, you're talking about 11 of a possible 12 points, so it's unfolded pretty well. And again, it's so easy to get behind a quote-unquote underdog. And the way that this team has been built with that core six veterans, but all the youth around them, you're satisfying the guys, the fans that want to win now, and you're satisfying to a degree the group of fans, that fan base that wants the full-on rebuild. You're getting the best of both worlds right now.
This was Mackenzie Weegar on Wednesday morning after the win over Pittsburgh. Flames did not practice. They did an off-ice workout at the Saddle Dome. The guys who did not play on Tuesday night skated at Winsport, but not a full practice at Winsport. They did an off-ice at the Dome. Jimmy Carr and Jim Jeffries are at the Dome on Wednesday night. This was Mackenzie Weegar inside the room on the attitude and the underdog mentality right now.
We've talked about that a few times already. It's just, you know, that chip on our shoulder that we've carried, you know, before in training camp and whatnot. But that's we don't really focus too much on that. Maybe the funny stuff we'll show each other, like Ras, or if somebody toe picks or something like that. But it's just about us in this room, and it's just a no quit mentality, and that's kind of what we've been going with.
And then on top of that, they've got that attitude, they've got that resiliency, and they just work. And that's been the constant, maybe the number one constant through six games, is that even, again, they were very... Rasmus Anderson said it in the room on Wednesday morning, like, hey, we didn't love our game against Pittsburgh. And 5-on-5, I know that the Flames brass and coaching staff are kind of just meh on the way they played. But even though that was the case, it wasn't a product of like laziness. It was a product of sometimes you're not on it.
Execution, not effort.
And that effort and that work level is always high and has been high throughout. And you know that. And this was Ryan Lomberg on our post game show. This was a Flames Talk post game on Tuesday night. I thought Lomberg spelled it out really well in terms of what they've got to do on a night to night basis.
We got to play the right way every game. You know, every time we're on that ice. You know, obviously wins matter, but the most important thing is playing the right way, because we play the right way, then, you know, we're going to win more than we lose, and we're going to do it when it matters the most. So obviously, like you said, we're a resilient group. We're not going to go away, and we showed it tonight.
Like that, those are the type of quotes, especially when you're hearing guys say things and then you see them put their money where their mouth is. Like that's the type of stuff that, as a fan, I think it's pretty easy to get behind, and the types of teams that mix that underdog mentality and that kind of us against the world and proving everybody wrong type feel, on top of the fact they just go out and they work their tails off night in, night out. Yeah, you can understand why people are digging this group right now.
Well, the attitude helps set the culture. And listening to Ryan Lomberg there, listening to Mackenzie Weegar before him, that attitude is a culture-building attitude where you're going to go out, and the Calgary Flames are probably going to find themselves outskilled on some nights. But if you can focus on making sure that you're not outwilled, that sets the culture, that sets the foundation, that sets the expectation that, yeah, the Calgary Flames are not going to go 81-0-1, just like they weren't going to go 82-0. But if you go out with the same approach, the workmanlike approach, you stand a good chance of coming out on the other side in a positive manner, whether it's a win or not. When you can look at yourself in the mirror at the end of the game, and you can look to the guy to your left and you can look to the guy to the right, and you all agree as a consensus that you gave it 100%, that's the expectation.
No, 110%.
No.
This is hockey, Vic.
Incorrect. It's impossible to give more than 100%. There are no bonus marks in hockey.
I give 1,000%, so you can give 110%.
Okay. Give 110% to the guy to the left, the guy to the right.
This is a hockey show.
That's how you set an expectation, and that's what you build your foundation on.
And they keep on finding ways to win and finding different ways to win. Like all six of these games really haven't been one that has resembled the other that much. It's been very different. I mean, this is the first buzzer beater win that the Flames have had, where Nazem Kadri scores with less than 43 seconds to go. By the way, and I know it was Les who asked him the question first in the postgame scrum Tuesday night, and he was, yeah, I was ready for the redemption question. But by the way, for all the, that miscue on Saturday night proves that Nazem Kadri doesn't want to be here. He's a liability. Did you see Nazem on the game-tying goal? Like, that's game six of a regular season. That guy was fired up like game six of a playoff series. And did you see Nazem on the bench when Justin Kirkland scored the eventual shootout winner? That doesn't look like a guy who's checked out and doesn't want to be here. So I'm going to keep on pushing back on that BS. I almost said it. That BS narrative.
Cam, get the button ready just in case.
I'm very good at censoring, but like sometimes I go a little bit closer.
And I'm surprised I haven't gone over the line, or maybe I have and nobody's just told me.
So I'm just going to keep pushing back on that narrative, because I just think it is garbage, that this whole idea of him not wanting to be here. But they're finding ways to win, and they're finding ways to win when even they're not at their best, which Rasmus Anderson talked about on Wednesday morning as well.
That's what good teams does, right? And even when they don't have their A game, still find a way to get points and even to win, and you know, shootout is what it is, and but it's still a skill, and you know, you trust your goalies, and you still got to score some goals in shootout. So I'm one of those guys. I like to shoot out, and a lot of people doesn't, but I like it, and it's
Yeah, you just find a way to win. And as I said, that's what good teams does. And we've had a good start here. And haven't loved our last two games, but we still managed to get 3 out of 4 points. And so, yeah, it's something to build on. And as I said, we got probably the toughest challenge yet tomorrow and play a really good team.
That's what this group has been so far. They play the right way. They work. They found ways. Sometimes they've been great. Sometimes they haven't been quite as on it. But the underdog story, it's an easy one to get behind, isn't it? And
oh, yeah.
I don't know how long this role is going to last for. I don't know how long the unbeaten and regulation streak is going to last for. But I do have a pretty good idea through six games what the identity of this team is. And, boy, it's been a long time since I could sit here and tell you confidently what an identity of a Calgary Flames team is, period, let alone this early in a season. There have been years when George or Robert on overtime or Flames Talk postgame would ask me what the identity of the team is. I said, I don't know what the hell to tell you. Like, I don't know what it is. This year, there's no issue with that.
No, you know. I know, it's weird. It's actually, that's interesting to phrase it that way, because through six games, I feel like I can pinpoint four or five individual words to give to describe this team, whereas in seasons past, they've kind of been, all right, well, what is the identity of the Calgary Flames? You have to stop and you have, like, to pause. And you're like,
I don't know, they're inconsistent.
And maybe that was always the fatal flaw in those groups that were assembled, is you're not entirely sure what they're supposed to be or what they're striving for. This one is just put your work boots on, go to work, give it 110%,
thank you,
and let the chips fall where they may.
On the text line, 960-960, this is Yurayo in Red Deer, says, as long as the team is fun to watch and each game's entertaining, I don't care if they're good or bad. This says, Sir Patrick, you know just as well as most of us fans, we can turn on this team in a dime. It's been proven time and time again. We love a team within the first 20 games. We hate the team. We hate the team preseason. We love the team. Right now, just enjoy the ride. Here's Ben in traffic, who says, I hate to be a downer here, but the Flames are only good now because of the vets, Uyghur, Anderson, Kadri, etc. In 3 to 5 years, the youth on the team right now won't be that great. Need that top elite guy still. Great to see them winning, but with the correct roster, they'll be back where they were last year again. Fun, though, for now. This from Grant, who says, where are all the clowns that trash Kadri? Same people who said Wolf was done last year. Amateurs. That's from Grant, not from me. this says, I still think it's beneficial from Ned for the Flames to get 2 home games in the playoffs or finish 2 points out of the playoffs. I think it's more beneficial than to get a pick between 5 and 16 in the draft. This says the expectations of the team are equivalent to a fourth line minimum league guy who scores 10 to 15 goals. He's not expected to, but it's really nice that he chips in. What else we got here? This says, what's great to see is that the Flames and the Wranglers are having great starts. The development's strong, and they're building a strong culture and attitude. Shub says, Lombo's unbelievable. What a leader, what a gem, and what a beauty. Hard to disagree on that front. Didn't Conroy say this team would be hardworking, hard to play against, and fun to watch? Well, check, 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 and check. Jay in Silverado says, I'm right with what you're saying. I was loving the new direction of the Flames. I was all in on Team Tank in order to hopefully draft a future number one center. While I'm really enjoying the games this year, I always resort back to, come playoffs, you need elite talent, especially at center, and you can't trade for that. You need to draft it. I'm honestly just scared this is a replay of the find-a-way Flame season and a return to the mediocre middle. I want the best for this team long-term, so if they're in a playoff spot at the trade deadline, if there's a good offer for a veteran, I hope that the Flames take it. And I don't know, Vix, about specific examples, how that would play out. But what I am extremely confident in is that the blueprint on October 23rd is the same as the blueprint on February 23rd. Yeah. I don't think, based on whatever success they may or may not have here between now and the trade deadline, that the blueprint is significantly going to be altered at all.
No, the plan is, to me, set in pen, and you're not sitting there with whiteout trying to go over it so you can rescribble, acquire a deadline rental at the expense of a first or a second round pick or a prospect in the organization. I think Craig Conroy remembers the lessons learned from the 14-15 season, where an upstart Calgary Flames team with low expectations, somehow bucked all preseason predictions and qualified for the Stanley Cup playoffs and won a round. I think he's aware of how that can alter a path negatively, and he's not going to repeat the past.
This says, just wanted to throw this out there loud and clear. Team Tank should look into the mirror. Anyone who's still on Team Tank should really jump off that bandwagon. To quote President Bill Pullman, we'll not go quietly into the night. We'll not vanish without a fight.
Is that it?
Believes in Independence Day
reference. Yeah.
Yep. This says, we're tied with last year's President's Trophy winning New York Rangers right now, Pat. Marshall from Calgary says, calling it now, Flames will win 42 games this year and make the playoffs. They'll be deadly in the first round because of their relentless work ethic. Kevin from Carstairs says, I'm really excited about the team showing all the naysayers they're better than what they were the last year or so. The only frustration I have with how the team played with those 2 minutes with the game against Pittsburgh where they scored the third goal, I believe it was just domination in Calgary's zone, and they had multiple opportunities to get the puck out that brought back a little bit of here we go, but I'm glad they pulled it out. And finally from Matt and Cochran says, with the 11th overall pick in the 2025 draft, the Montreal Canadiens select is going to haunt me all season. You know, we're six games in, Matt. There's still plenty of let the chips fall where they may when it comes to this conversation. Hey, like there's still 76 to go.
There is, but I do understand that hesitation of they're going to be just good enough to get 11 and lose that first round pick.
I do fully understand that, but you know, there's still 76 games
yeah.
for things to play.
Still some runway here.
Flames Talk is underway this hour on this Wednesday. Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers along with you. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts and live right here on Sportsnet 960. The Fan text line remains open at 960-960. Keep them coming. Good conversation to kick off this hour. Well, Wednesday morning, this morning, the Flames rolled out the red carpet to honor Renfrew Educational Services 50 years of contribution to students in Calgary and announced the Flames Foundation teaming up with hundreds of other Calgary donors to ensure Renfrew completes its $30 million, 60,000 square foot K-12 school for students with complex medical needs and their families. The Flames Foundation partnering with Renfrew Educational Services with a gift of $1.5 million. And on this Wednesday, the red carpet was rolled out this morning, and the announcements and some of the details were rolled out as well. And I can't think of a better human being to talk about the partnership than the gentleman we have right now on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. He's an original member of the Calgary Flames. He's a 1989 Stanley Cup champion. He's also the capital campaign chair of Renfrew Education Services as well. We say hello to the one and only Jim Paplinski, who joins us on the program right now. Pep, appreciate the time. How are we doing?
Well, thank you for taking the time, and you're on it, man. I just you've hit all of the high points. Thank you for sharing this information for all of your listeners.
Well, no problem, and I can hit the high points, but I can't think of a better guy to kind of fill in some of the things in between. So I guess first of all, tell us about the event Wednesday morning and how everything went, how it all played out, Pep.
Well, it was absolutely delightful. You know, it's you know, I'll try not to wander too much, but if you know, there's in Canada, there's about 50,000 people that have got complex, serious disabilities, and that group, particularly when you've got a child in that category, it just takes all of your energy to take care of that child. And you tend to become somewhat marginalized in that your patterns change, your friend group change, the time that that you've got yourself changes. And as a result, your world really, really changes. And Renfrew provides parents 8 hours of certainty where their child, no matter how severe, is cared for, is loved, and is educated to the point where whatever potential they have can be realized. And if you do not have a person with a complex, serious disability in your inner circle, it's really hard to understand just how impactful that is. And so this morning, the Flames Foundation. It was Candace Gowdy. She had the idea. She said, we should roll out the carpet for all the kids at Renfrew. And it was, when she said it, I thought, boy, I wish I would have had that idea. It was absolutely brilliant. So Harvey came out. A whole bunch of the parents came out. The staff at Renfrew came out. Jeff McKeag was there, one of the four owners of the Flames, you know, just representing Murray Edwards and Alan Markin and Alvin Libben so well. I mean, I got to tell you, I'm not an emotional guy, but there were times I'm biting my lip to hold back the tears. When you see how much these kids and parents appreciate just being seen, it really is heartwarming. And so that was what took place this morning. It sounds maybe silly or trite to say that the $1.5 million that the Flames Foundation contributed and invested in Renfrew on behalf of all its Flames fans was secondary, but in some respects it is, because we're going to get the money to build this school, but to use the Flames' reach around the world, around the community, as a world-class organization to recognize Renfrew as another world-class organization that arguably flies below the radar, but that does great work. I got to tell you, it was just absolutely outstanding. So that was the morning, and now we're talking to you about it, and that couldn't be any better.
Well, and you know, you talk about the impact that Renfrew Educational Services makes in so many lives, both the children and the families. Can you tell us a little bit more about the K-12 school initiative and why that is so important and why that's so groundbreaking?
Well, look, it's, you know, there's a bunch of controversy around them putting typical kids with, let's say, atypical kids, but you know, there's theory and then there's the practicality of it. And when you get kids that are as challenged as the kids in Renfrew, if you put them into what I would call the general population, you know, the way kids are, they do not have the ability to defend themselves. They don't have the ability to integrate into a conventional stream. The resources are not there in the public system. I mean, at Renfrew, at a maximum, you're three students per teacher. And if you need it, you're one-to-one. You know, talk to any teacher in the public system and ask them what it's like if you've got a student that has got significant requirements. It just is, it's almost impossible to take care of that person. And so what the K-12 school will do is it will take, you know, if you were to ask Janice McTighe, who's the driver of Renfrew since 1974, I can't say this enough. I mean, she has balanced her budget for 50 years. She's a penny pincher, but she spends on the things that need to get done to give these kids every opportunity to develop to their potential. You look at the technology that's in the school. You look at the quality of the staff. You look at the cleanliness of the facility. It's just all top shelf. And so, if you are in the system as it exists today, what Janice will tell you is the happiest day of her year is also the saddest day of the year, and that is the day that the grade sixes graduate, because the happiness is there that these kids have developed for another year, but the sadness is there because they don't have a grade seven to go to that is Renfrew.
Right.
And when we get this school built, the Renfrew for grade 7 and 8 and 9 and 10 and 11 and 12 will be there. We've got a waiting list at Renfrew of 200 kids. If we had that school yesterday, it would be filled today. And the way that Renfrew knows how to operate a school and deliver the highest level of service, I mean, it is world-class. You want to go down there sometime, give me a call. I'll take you down. Thursday morning or Thursday afternoon is the best time. And I would strongly suggest that any person that has got the time should take a half an hour and walk through Renfrew and see two things. One, the way people with challenges in our community are taken care of and respected. And number two, you get an appreciation for your own situation if you don't have some of the disabilities that these folks are dealing with. So that's why K-12 is important, and that's why Janice and her team of Nikki and Kim and Alyssa and many, many others are absolutely possessed to get this school built as quickly as possible.
And you know, just, and you kind of touched on it already, Pep, but just as kind of a last point, you know, you mentioned the Flames Foundation and how instrumental it is, not just the $1.5 million gift, but also just the entire, to have the Flames Foundation on board and to have the backing of Flames ownership. And for you, involved with Renfrew now and obviously a proud member of the Flames alumni, can you just touch on the importance of having the foundation and having the Flames on board, just how important that is?
Well, you know, it's hard to measure these things, and it's really hard to explain it until you see it. When you see it, you know it. You know, Jeff McCaig said today, you know, the foundation loves to support people who play hockey, love to support people who watch hockey, and love to support people who don't do either. And I'm not saying that the kids at Renfrew don't play hockey. I'm not saying that they don't watch hockey. The point is, the Flames Foundation is more than just hockey. You know, our old friend Ken King, back in the late 90s, talked about the foundation as being a door to the community. You open up that door and it just gives you a window into a world of possibilities. And that's what the Flames Foundation is doing for Renfrew. There's nothing in it for the Flames Foundation to support Renfrew. These kids are not buying tickets. Now, they love Harvey the Hound, man. I mean, like, we had a dog pile there. I'm telling you, it was outstanding. But you know, the importance of organizations like the Flames Foundation that you know, I heard this a long time ago. We don't always do the thing right, but we always do the right thing. And the Flames Foundation does the right thing. There are hundreds of organizations that the foundation has supported over the years, and Renfrew is going to be one of the larger ones, and I would argue will provide as much or more satisfaction than many others, because it is so obvious in our community. When you go and you see the way these kids light up, when you see what these dollars will do today and for decades, I mean, you know, this school is going to last for a long, long time, and there's no shortage of kids with disabilities. As I say, there's 200 on the waiting list.
Yeah.
There's, thousands in Calgary, and we're ready to get going because of Janice and her team, and because of support from people like Jeff McCaig and Murray Edwards and Alan Markin and Alvin Libben and the Flames Foundation.
If you'd like to find out more about Renfrew Educational Services, the website is renfreweducation.org. One more time, that's renfreweducation.org. And Jim Poplinski is the capital campaign chair for Renfrew Education Services. Hey, Pep, that is awesome that it went as well as it did this morning. Congratulations on a great day, and thanks for spending some time with us here on the show. Really appreciate the insight, hey?
Thank you very, very much. And if you want to know more about it, I'm easy to find. Call anytime.
Okay, Pep, hey, that's awesome. Yeah, go ahead.
You know what? Let me throw one other thing out there, too. If you're listening and you have a child with a complex disability in your inner circle, or you know of somebody who does, call Renfrew. They can't solve everything, but they've got a resource center there that can point you in a direction, that can listen to you, and that can understand the feelings and the challenges that you have. You will be better for it. And Renfrew is there, whether you're donating to them or not, man. You can call from anywhere. And I would be shocked that if you asked to speak to Janice McTighe, that she doesn't pick up the phone or call you back.
That's awesome. And Pep, it's it's funny. Our text line is lighting up with people who have who either have friends or themselves have been touched by Renfrew on top of that. So it's you've struck a chord, my friend. The text line is loving it as well. So that is awesome. I'm so happy that this partnership was able to be finalized on this Wednesday. And one more time, follow Pep's lead on that. RenfrewEducation.org is the website with all the resources there. Phone number. Numbers and a whole lot more. Thank you, Pep. Really appreciate the time today. Hey,
keep her going.
Be well. Jim Poplinski, Flames alumni, 1989 Stanley Cup champion, original member of the Calgary Flames and Renfrew Education Services Capital Campaign Chair. For more information, by the way, on the Flames Foundation, the website CalgaryFlamesFoundation.com. This text says, my best friend's son is at Renfrew, and they also provide once-a-month respite Saturday school so parents can do yard work and grocery shop. The grade 7 to 12 program is desperately needed, and that's what this K to 12 program is going to do. And Travis in Midnapore says, listening now about Renfrew, my daughter went there, and everything they do is incredible. Let's start to wrap things up on this half of Flames Talk. Thanks to Jim Poplinski for joining us on the program. Jim joined us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline using the same secret recipe since 1975 at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Enjoying the game at home? Call for pickup or delivery at 403-248-3344.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Daily Flames Roundtable time now on this Wednesday edition of the program. Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg, now the voice of the Calgary Flames, Derek Wills joins us. Daily Flames Roundtable for Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. Gentlemen, I don't know if we have any more words to say about the Justin Kirkland story, but we're going to try anyway because it just keeps on adding layers and it is. It's like a true onion. You keep on peeling it back and more stories and more good stories pop out. How about on Tuesday night, not only did he pick up the primary assist on Rasmus Anderson's 1-0 goal, not only did he get some increased playing time due to some penalty trouble, so he was playing lots on the penalty kill, and Martin Pospisil got sat down for a good 15 minutes in the second period, which bumped up Justin Kirkland's ice time as well. And then, Willsy, how about that shootout move in round 6 to win the game for the Flames 4-3 over the Pittsburgh Penguins? So I guess the question I would ask, because, boy, we've talked a lot about this story and for good reason, when's the last time y'all can remember a surprise underdog story quite like this one that truly kind of came out of nowhere?
Y'all? Are you from Texas?
No, I'm from Cal. I've experienced...
It's in his backyard. It's
fine. I've experienced 40 Calgary Stampedes. I think I'm allowed to say y'all.
Okay. I hope you're wearing a cowboy hat right now.
Just chats.
I don't know if I can really come up with a great example of the last time we've seen an underdog story like this. I don't know. Rocky Balboa when he didn't beat, but went the distance with Apollo Creed. I mean, I'm not sure I can come up with a great hockey one just off the top of my head, but it's been such a fun story to watch. And, one of my favorite parts about last night's game, and there are a lot of things I loved about the Flames' thrilling shootout victory over the Penguins to move them to 5-0-1 to start the season. But you think about the shootout. So it's 2-2 following five shooters aside. The Flames decide to go with Justin Kirkland, who has scored one NHL goal in his career. The Penguins decide to go with Evgeny Malkin. Makes sense. He has scored 500 goals in his NHL career. Kirkland scores, Malkin doesn't, Flames beat the Penguins. I mean, just an incredible end to what was a really fun hockey game at Scotiabank Saddledome. And Justin Kirkland's been a great story, much like the Calgary Flames have been a great story. I think the team from the get-go has been considered an underdog. Kirkland certainly scoring his first NHL goal at the age of 28 and then getting the shootout winner last night has certainly been a great underdog story as well. And you know, he's an easy guy to cheer for. And well, one of my favorite things about Justin Kirkland is, you know, usually when an NHL player does something that excites him, he'll kind of try to play it cool. Justin Kirkland's not trying to play it cool. He has been open and honest about how much he has enjoyed this experience of getting called up and getting to play and being involved in big moments, whether it be his first NHL goal or whether it be the shootout winner last night. I just really appreciate how upfront he's been about how much he's enjoyed this experience so far. And it's been cool to watch him have success. And hey, when I called his shootout attempt last night, I called it a hunch by Ryan Huska, but Ryan Pike put out a tweet earlier today saying that Justin Kirkland is 62.9% shootouts in his AHL career. So maybe less a hunch by Ryan Huska and the head coach just knowing how good he's been at the American League level and giving him a shot in the NHL.
It's funny, guys. Like that's, Willsey, that's Ryan Huska talked about that post game. Dustin Wolf talked about that post game as well. He's like, I've never seen a miss in the American League because they played together in Stockton when Dustin was first getting into the American League. And a few other guys, have even on Twitter, some guys who have played with him in the American League, have said this guy was Mr. Automatic when it came to shootouts in the American League. It's pretty cool, hey?
Oh, it absolutely is. And he is a guy who's helped the Flames win hockey games, and he's done it with a giant smile on his face. And again, there have been a lot of great stories for the Flames this season, and Justin Kirkland certainly has been one of them.
For me, he's almost a metaphor for the 2024-25 Calgary Flames, because a lot of the words or adjectives I would use to describe Justin Kirkland, you could use for the team as a whole and vice versa. Hardworking, he's an underdog, he's potentially overachieving, but he's still humble and easy to root for and has been an absolutely great soundbite. So, Pat, when you ask the question, when's the last time there's been a surprise underdog story like this? Nothing immediately jumps to mind. There are several names that sort of, you know, find your way in, but I don't think that they necessarily had the impact. Like, I think back to Josh Juris or a Paul Byron or even a Ryan Lomberg, thinking from where he started as a camp invite to Penticton, to summer camp into Penticton at the Young Stars, to what he was able to parlay that into in terms of an NHL career and a two-year contract with the Calgary Flames this summer. But the whirlwind that Justin Kirkland has entered into, where he gets recalled because of an injury. Willsey, you mentioned it, scores his first NHL goal 10 years after going through the NHL draft. The only other two to do that are both goaltenders, so you're in kind of rare air there as well. Huh. You mentioned the assist on Rasmus Anderson. Might not go down as the prettiest assist in the history of the Calgary Flames, but it still counts. And then with everything on the line against the Pittsburgh Penguins, goes out and is automatic. He is just such an easy guy to root for. You listen to him post-game, and He's not exaggerating. He's not, you know, just saying the cliches. He's like, I'm living the dream right now. And when he says that, you certainly believe it. Just an easy guy to root for and one of the biggest underdog stories, or the biggest underdog story, at least in terms of this sample size, that I can remember with the Flames.
And so I was thinking about it. So I throw that question out and sent it off to Willsey earlier. And I'm thinking to myself, I didn't even know the answer at the time, because Willsey, you threw out the name Josh Juris last night. So I was like, for at least in like the way that I remember it, now that was a decade ago, but you know, I remember when camp ended that year, and that was the 14-15 season, and Josh Juris started that year in the American League, and I remember there was a big hubbub about how could the Flames allow Josh Juris to start in the American League after the great training camp that he had. And I think it took about 2 weeks, and 2 weeks later, I remember exactly where I was for whatever reason, but I remember exactly where I was when he got recalled. And so, but everybody was like clamoring for it. It was like, bring Juris up. And they did. And he had a great season, and it was a really fun year. Well, that wasn't the case. Like when Kevin Rooney went down, it was like, okay, who are they going to call up? Are they going to go with Morton? Are they going to go with Kirkland? But it wasn't. And Kirkland had a good camp too. But it wasn't like there was this groundswell of how are they letting Justin Kirkland start in the American League? And then he gets called up and you know, talking to Brad Pascal and Craig Conroy, like they brought him in for a reason. They brought him in to be a guy who could do this, step in without a whole lot of learning curve and just be able to fill a spot fairly seamlessly. But at no point was I expecting this guy to turn into one of the top two or three stories of the early season, which he has. The only one that I can think of that is similar to this It was last, because I felt the same way about Pospisil when they brought him up in November. I was like, Martin Pospisil? What are they doing here? And then next thing you know, Wilsey, you've been calling him for the last number of months, like maybe one of the most impactful rookies last year, and for good reason. That's the only one I can think of that the recall happened, and you're like, okay, and then it turned into something a whole lot more. Now, we don't have the same sample size with Kirkland as we do now with Pospisil, but that's the only one that I can think of that is even similar in my recollection, because a lot of other ones, they were a little bit more on the radar, but this one was so off the radar, and yet look at the story it's turned into.
Yeah, and it's a good comparison, but I would say that Martin Pospisil was more a prospect than Justin Kirkland.
Fair.
I mean,
no, absolutely.
When do you stop calling a guy a prospect? Probably before he turns 28. I mean, let's be honest, there are late bloomers, but I mean, it's been such a cool story, and we'll have to wait and see how the Justin Kirkland story plays out and how the Calgary Flames story plays out. But this team's been finding ways, and everybody loves a good underdog story, and I think that's why there's a lot of buzz around this team, not only in Calgary, but around the league right now.
Yeah, probably at some point before 400 American League games as well, or whatever he's at. That's probably a good point. He's Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. Daily Flames Roundtable. Well, that's been a really fun story that we just can't stop talking about through this 5-0-1 start. And guys, the Flames currently sit sixth overall in the NHL with a .918 team save percentage. I don't know what the numbers would be, but I know they'd be much higher if you remove that first period against Vancouver in the season opener. But even still, their .918 with that first period has them sixth overall in the NHL. Guys, if goaltending was the biggest question mark, which I think we're probably unanimous on going into the season, has the performances of Dustin Wolfe and Dan Vladar, would that then be the biggest surprise of the early season?
If you were to break it down, probably. I mean, for me, the biggest surprise is the Flames are 5-0-1 and off to the best six-game start in the 52-season history of the franchise. But I guess, how do you get there? And if you were to break it down by position, then certainly goaltending would be number one for me. I think it's been the biggest strength six games into the season, and I definitely didn't see that coming. I didn't see either one of Dan Vladar or Dustin Wolf playing at the level that Jacob Markstrom did for most of last season. But between the two of them, they've been brilliant. And as we talked about on the postgame show after that victory over the Penguins, Dustin Wolf has played in three games this season, and he has been one of the three stars in all three games. And Pat, you pick the three stars at home, and he's been the first star once, the second star once, and the third star once. So he has been one of the Flames' best players in all three games that he's played in. He's been one of the best players, period, in all three games that he's played in, and off to a fantastic 3-0 start. And, you know, Dan Vladar doesn't have those star recognitions in the three games that he's played, but I think he's been brilliant as well. Even in that 6-5 overtime victory over the Canucks, I mean, like you said, if you throw out the first period of that game, and I kind of do throw out the first period of that game because of that JT Miller hit on Kevin Rooney and how the Flames responded to it. And that led to a bunch of Canucks power plays, and they scored two power plays, but for all intents and purposes, three power play goals in that game against the Flames. The goaltending for me has been the backbone of this team. They have played well in front of the goaltenders. I think the Flames, for the most part, have defended really well, but there have been breakdowns, just like there are with every team, especially early in the season. And the goaltenders have been there, and they've made big saves and timely saves. And again, for me, the biggest reason why the Flames are 5-0-1, and there are many, but number one on my list is goaltending.
One of my biggest areas of concern for the Calgary Flames coming into the season was goaltending, and it wasn't necessarily an extension of Dan Vladar and Dustin Wolf, but I was interested, I guess would probably be the best way to put it, in how the defense was going to play in front of them. And if you had told me that the Calgary Flames would be closer to 26th than 6th in team save percentage through the opening portion of the game, of the season, pardon me, I would believe you. So the fact that the defense has held up the way it has, and the goaltending, both Dustin Wolf and Dan Vladar, have been there when needed, I think it's the most pleasant surprise for the Calgary Flames so far. It's put them in a position to earn 11 of a 12 possible points. I think they've been equally as good. And as you mentioned, Wilsey, Dustin Wolf getting the nod on the star front. But Dustin Wolf, or pardon me, Dan Vladar has been absolutely integral in
fairness,
the games that he's
I don't choose, you don't the, choose stars the stars on the road. So you can't get mad at me.
I wasn't trying to throw you under the bus I do appreciate the caveat that you placed on it. This isn't a Pat Steinberg, president of the Dustin Wolf fan club, and skewing the results or anything like that. But yeah, I think there were a lot of questions entering training camp and entering the regular season about how Calgary's goaltending tandem was going to hold up. And I remember cautioning on Flames Talk in preseason and exhibition play about maybe you don't judge Dustin Wolf specifically on what his goals against or his save percentage might look like. But you can certainly do that through three games of the regular season. And it has been absolutely a blessing for the Calgary Flames to have two goalies that have answered the bell so far the way that they have.
Yeah, I mean, guys, I thought about this after sending out the questions or the topics. And I mean, I didn't come into this. I didn't come into the season feeling that they were going to be bad. Definitely not. I came into this season very uncertain about what they were going to be. And I thought it might take some time for both Dustin, because he's never played full time in the NHL, and Dan, because he's coming off of significant hip surgery. I thought it might take a little bit of time for them to get to where they want to be. So the surprise for me is that they've both hit the ground running at such a high level. And you know, for eight periods, Dan Vladar is a 931. For nine periods, Dustin Wolf's a 936. You're not getting a whole lot better than that. And it remains a question mark, because there's still 76 games to go. It remains a question mark to see how this is going to translate over the course of a full season. But guys, it is by far the biggest pleasant surprise for me, just because I didn't know what to expect, but I definitely wasn't expecting it to be at this high a level, maybe throughout the entire season, but definitely not right off the get-go. And I give them both a lot of credit. I mean, right from minute one, when Dan Vladar sat down with Wes Gilbertson and I on the Hot Stove Lounge after the season, after the golf tournament, and Dan was just buzzing when talking about how good he feels when he's able to go down to the Butterfly and he doesn't feel pain when he sits down in his car and all that type of stuff. Like he was almost glowing when he was talking about it. And then Dustin Wolf on day one or two at training camp at Winsport, I remember him being asked about the attitude, and he just said, like, no smile, no smirk, just dead-eyed saying, yeah, I'm here to come and win a job. I don't care who I'm competing against. That's my only goal here at this camp. And I just came away from both of those interactions with the goalies saying, well, their head's in the right place, and their head being in the right place so far has translated to their game being in the right place. I give them both a ton of credit.
Me too. And the other guy who I think deserves a lot of credit is Jordan Sigalette. So I think his new title is senior goaltending coach. I mean, he identified Dan Vladar as a guy who was buried in the Bruins system and had a ton of potential. And we really haven't had an opportunity to see what Dan Vladar is at the NHL level, because he was, again, buried behind Jacob Markstrom during his first few seasons with the Flames. So now we're getting more of a look at him. And Dustin Wolf is a guy who Jordan Sigalette pounded the table for, and the Flames rolled the dice with a seventh round pick, the fourth to last pick in that NHL draft back in 2019. And why not? I think it was a great gamble, because he's had success at every single level. And the only reason he lasted until the seventh round was because he's undersized, not as a human being, but as an NHL goaltender. He's not a small man. He's just small by NHL goaltending standards. And, you know, he's dominated at the Western Hockey League level. He's dominated at the American Hockey League level. And I still think it's a question, will he dominate at the National Hockey League level? Kind of at the same level that UC Saros has as another undersized goaltender for the Predators. But small sample size, we're six games in, but the early returns for both Dan Vladar and Dustin Wolf have been fantastic. And again, I said it before, I'll say it one more time. The single biggest reason for me why the Flames are 5-0-1-1 are Vladar and Wolf.
Yep. And I may have had a sarcastic comment about Jordan Sigalet as you were giving him credit, but 100%. He's when you throw in Ignatiev and Cooley, and even if you go take a look at, you know, Igor Igorov's numbers in Russia, like, this goaltending pipeline has turned into a massive strength of the organization under Jordan Sigalet. And that decision about 5 years ago, 4 years ago, when they bumped him up to director of goaltending, it's really paid massive dividends so far. So 100%, ton of credit. And, you know, McKenzie's, you talk to the goaltending department about the way McKenzie Skapski's worked with Devin Cooley, and Cooley's bonkers numbers in the American League are really promising to start the year. And the work that Jason LaBarbera has done with both Dustin Wolf and McKenzie Skapski's done with Dustin Wolf, and obviously Barbs and Dan Vladar, the entire goaltending department has really, really turned this into an organizational strength. So you're bang on, Wilsey. They deserve a massive salute. Good stuff, my friend. We will see you on Thursday for what Rasmus Anderson called Wednesday morning the biggest challenge yet. Big game against the Hurricanes on Thursday. Thank you, pal.
Can't wait. Should be fun. Talk to you guys tomorrow.
He is Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll start to wrap us up on this hour of Flames Talk. Thanks to Sham. Thanks to Cam, our outstanding producers this hour. And as we wrap up, we'll tell you that the Daily Flames Roundtable is brought to you, as always, by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport.